Support for programming on NET Radio comes from The Ross. Although The Ross is temporarily closed because of the coronavirus pandemic, films are now streaming from the website. Currently showing from The Ross are 8 films, as well as the Met Opera and the London National Theatre. For more information and a list of what's streaming, theross.org. Support for programming also comes from Cornerstone Bank, a family-owned bank providing custom investments, trust, and estate planning services since 1882, with 43 central Nebraska locations. CornerstoneConnect.com, Cornerstone Bank, building trust on a solid foundation. Good morning, and welcome to Friday Live here on NET Radio. Most of today's show is pre-recorded as we protect ourselves and our guests from the spread of COVID-19. I'm Genevieve Randall. Coming up on the show this morning, Nebraska State poet Matt Mason has some new poems to read for us. I'll talk with Maury Enders about how his theater family at Lincoln Community Playhouse is connecting during the pandemic. Also, Friday Live intern Brandon Thomas talks with a producer from Platte Basin Time Lapse about a new documentary project. And as we have been doing each week, we'll hear music by Nebraska's musicians. We start this morning with Brothers, originally from Imperial, Nebraska. The Talbot Brothers' most recent album is Ghost Talker. They're in the middle of releasing a new acoustic recording on all their digital platforms every week for 6 weeks. There will be a new one today, in fact. This is the one they released last week, an acoustic version of their song Shadowboxing, here on Friday Live.
Ain't got much to show. Spent most of my matches back against the ropes. There's a crowd looking on, what do you wanna see? Been throwing fights my whole life for the right fee. I need the win one, get me back on my feet. Some heat instead of all this shadow boxing. Nothing comes easy, and if it does, it comes cheap. Like a bottom shelf bourbon, all the lies that I tell through my teeth. There's a fire in my eyes and I wanna watch it burn. You're the man that I was, to send the ashes to the urn. I need the win one, get me back on my feet. A strong footing, get my punches some heat.
I need the wind one, get me back on my feet.
That's titled Shadowboxing, a song by the Talbot Brothers from a series of acoustic recordings they're releasing each week for 6 weeks. You can see the video for another few days on the Friday Live page at netnebraska.org/radio. This is Friday Live on NET Radio, and in about 12 minutes, we'll find out how Humanities Nebraska is creating some online programs. Friday Live, Maury Enders joins me. He is executive director for Lincoln Community Playhouse. Now, we were originally scheduled to talk about a production of Matilda, but thanks to technology, now they're gearing up for a completely different thing, Together Again, a musical extravaganza. I'll ask Maury when that is. Maury, I just have to say, though, first, I miss you. How are you?
Oh, I miss you, too. I'm doing okay. The basic premise of theater is a bunch of people get in a room and rehearse for a bunch of weeks, and then we get in a bigger room with a lot more people and do the play. So this totally upends my business model.
Yeah, I would say so. Well, so this sounds inventive. What is this musical extravaganza?
Well, we're calling it Together Again, a musical extravaganza. Here's the deal. So, you know, not only can audience members not come to the theater, but our actors and our backstage people can't come to the theater either, and they're very creative people. So we thought, what can we do to keep them busy while we're kind of on hiatus? So we came up with this, and the idea is that each of these actors are going to work on their own solos or duets or trios that they can Zoom each other and work on. And then everybody who is involved is going to work on two group numbers. We're going to open with Seasons of Love from Rent and close with You Will Be Found from Dear Evan Hansen. And we have fancy drops that we have that we can do and spotlights and all that kind of stuff. Now, the question of when can we do it, and that is we don't know. So we're selling tickets to a show that I don't know when it's going to be. But it's going to be great. We love Netflix and all of those other things. I'm watching the National Theater streaming shows. The Shakespeare's Globe is streaming shows. But it ain't the same thing sitting in your family room watching theater on television. Because theater is not just about you as an audience member and the performers. It's about you as an audience member with all the other audience members in the room. You know, it's a communal thing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I'm happy to hear, though, that you're finding a way to look forward to the future. I think that's a positive thing. And I'd like to mention, you know, of course, the money that people are paying for the reservations to this production that you're calling Together Again, it's a bit of a fundraiser for the Playhouse.
Yeah, absolutely. We cut our last three shows of our season, and so that means that income isn't there. That also means that even the concession stand income isn't there. All of those kind of things that keep us going. And so we have to work on the recovery phase for the Playhouse. And I mean, like everybody else is working on this too. And all the arts community is working really hard. We're working hard to keep our people together. And that's not only our actors and backstage people, but our audience members. We're communicating with them. Our Penguin Project kids meet every Thursday via Zoom, and they do Don't Stop Believing together. And so they can see each other and say hi, and it's just really great. We're reaching out to our seniors. Our Matilda cast members, whose show was cut, are going to be working on a dance together through the internet. So we're still trying to keep, you know, everybody connected. But the theater and all the other arts groups are really going to be part of the recovery of this whole coronavirus thing, because our souls are hurting, right?
Yeah.
Yes, we're hurting. People are physically having trouble. People are financially having trouble. But inside our souls, we are people that need to communicate with people. We need to be with other people. And the theater, as I said, is this communal event that involves your heartbeat linking up with everybody else's heartbeat. They have studies that show that as people watch a play, they synchronize their heartbeats together.
Oh, man, that is so cool.
Yeah. So, I mean, so So all everybody's suffering in that regard, too. And we are doing everything we can to make sure that we're really strong and ready to go to help with the recovery effort.
Even in the meantime, while we are waiting to find out when we can be together again, you can even watch some videos right now. You mentioned the Penguin Project. I find the video that's up right now on the Lincoln Community Playhouse page very inspiring, watching those kids singing Don't Stop Believin' together, which looks pretty cool. And you've even posted some videos that explain things like how the fly system works or what the ghost light is.
Yeah. So there's videos of all different parts of the backstage of the theater that people can check out. And we also have hashtag LCP Connect, where some of our folks have put up videos of them singing. We have Kent Steen, who's one of our actors and our board member, actually juggles fire on one of the videos. So it's fun.
Hashtag LCP Connect, right?
Yes.
We'll be sure to look for those, too. And we'll have a link to the Playhouse website where you can find more information. Maury Enders is the executive director of LCP. He's the star of some online videos giving tours of theater spaces and backstage. We also talked about the very much anticipated Together Again, a musical extravaganza. Those reservations are being taken now for a date to be determined. Maury, it's so great to talk with you, and really, be well.
Thank you. You too.
Thanks, Maury. You're listening to Friday Live, informing and inspiring Nebraska with unique programming. This is NET Radio. And for theater or literature fans, one of our musical selections later this morning was inspired by Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet. Next here on Friday Live, state poet Matt Mason reads four new poems for us, titled The Peachtree Blushes, one that's untitled, Keats Never Mentions Disneyland, and Yesterday's Heat.
This poem is called The Peachtree Blushes. The peach tree blushes in pink firework blossoms. The bees are back for the show. Cardinals sing, chase one another on the cherry branches, framed through the window to the right of the TV. We're inside, some on the red couch, some in their bedrooms. I check email, then Twitter, then email, then Twitter. Add items to the grocery list. It's exciting. It's the only place I've been. Woodpeckers have a prettier song than I remember. I've stopped waking up at 5 to check the news. Now I'm up at 5 to see if white blooms are dancing yet on the cherry tree. This poem doesn't have a title yet. I enjoy reading the issue of the literary magazine with all my friends in it, until I realize this issue has all my friends in it and not me. It's like a party they all threw. It's not like they didn't invite me. It's more like they invited me to submit an entry, then considered the entry for several months, then said no. Still, these poems are wonderful, sharp lines of loveliness, you talent-laden expletive deleted. Maybe I'll send this poem to the literary magazine, and they'll love it so much that there won't be room for any other poems. I hope not. My friends are so beautiful. I kind of like the things I see through their brilliant expletive deleted eyes. I wanted to read a couple poems about Disneyland, since it's closed right now. I've got a whole book manuscript of poems on Disneyland that I've been working on for a little while. So this poem's called Keats Never Mentions Disneyland. He had other things on his mind. Still, he tried to fashion beauty in the hope that this would be enough to move away that cloud which darkens spirits. He threw words, like a man who blows dandelion fluff at a dragon's snarl-sharpened maw, and stands head high with the certainty that this is enough. Keats died with only 25 years in his pocket. Now he's the one, painted on a vase, unable to age another day, as his bright shape intimates that a thing of beauty is a joy forever. You feel fairly certain that he was not referring to a churro with those lines, at least not specifically. Still, there's a sign as you enter Disneyland. Here, you leave today and enter the world of yesterday, tomorrow, and fantasy. Keats lives in all of these. And you think he might call it beautiful if he could come out from behind that biography you had to memorize for tests in high school. Take your hand so you could pull him forth and show him this carousel, steamboat, Paris daisy, jacaranda, submarine, pink trumpet tree, space rocket. As your life hits its stride, you blessed child, young man, father of almost twice Keats's years, what dreams do you still carry with you? What dreams do you dream next? What dreams do you hold before you to dispel this immortal despondence? And then this poem is called Yesterday's Heat. Your daughter's asleep in the room and you're out at the poolside breakfast buffet. And that sounds more elegant than it is. Poolside breakfast buffet. As it's three kinds of bread, a bowl of hard-boiled eggs, an artful stack of bananas, and family-friendly 90s pop. The place is packed. They're all here to get fueled for a day at the park. Your daughter and you will fly home today. You're in no hurry, appreciating the granddad with a hat like Goofy's face hanging over his own, the sparrows who sing and dive for crumbs, kids with mouse ear hats and princess dresses ready, yesterday's heat washed back into the night as today gets ready to show us all something new.
That's Nebraska State poet Matt Mason. We heard his poem Yesterday's Heat. Before that, Keats Never Mentions Disneyland, and two other new poems, one that's untitled, and The Peach Tree Blushes. We'll be archiving this show as a podcast, so you can listen again later. And there's more poetry yet this morning as well. Last year's prestigious Booker Prize-winning novel was unusual. Girl, Woman, Other by Bernadine Evaristo focuses on 12 different, mostly female characters who are Black and live in Great Britain. All About Books host Pat Leach admired the way the author introduced new characters into existing storylines.
Evaristo creates a sense of people telling their story in a way that felt authentic. She cleverly created relationships among them in small ways that contrast with the clear bonds between close friends or mothers and daughters.
Hear the complete review of Girl, Woman, Other by Bernadine Evaristo on our website at netnebraska.org/allaboutbooks. Nebraska Executive Director Chris Sumerick joins me next. Their list of speakers and their Chautauqua events have been on Friday Live in the past. Well, now they've started new online offerings with Humanities at Home Live. Plus, they're offering some help to organizations who are trying to survive these unusual circumstances. And full disclosure here, NET receives funding from Humanities Nebraska. Well, Chris, thanks for being my guest on Friday Live this week.
Happy to, Genevieve. It's always great to talk with you.
Tell me about Humanities at Home Live and how this series got started.
The spring has been, turned upside down and a lot of cancellations of events. And Humanities Nebraska programming is usually all about bringing people together in person to use the humanities to explore our lives and connect with each other. And so Humanities at Home was really just born out of the idea that just because we couldn't be together and physically, we wanted to stay connected and keep people connected with the humanities. We started putting together these online opportunities. experimenting a little bit with what people might be interested in learning about, and we'll see where it goes from here, but it's been fun so far.
The next one is coming up on Tuesday, May 5th, and that'll be at 7 p.m. Who's on the lineup there for that event?
And that one is going to be a wonderful storytelling team that we have based out of Grand Island, Lisa Brown Olson and Maria Marquez. And we have these programs that are usually going on all spring, Primetime Family Reading Time, where we have parents and kids together in libraries and schools and community centers around the state, engaging in reading kids' books together and talking about the themes in the books. And it's been a huge program for us. And needless to say, this spring, a lot of those were cut short or postponed because of the need for people to stay apart. We put one of our teams an idea in front of them to try doing a Humanities at Home version. So if people are able to tune in at 7 p.m. Central next Tuesday, they'll have an opportunity to listen to a book in both English and Spanish and be part of a discussion. And we use Facebook Live for questions and comments. The team is a wonderful duo that are really good at incorporating audience questions. And so I think it'll be a lot of fun.
Since those are streamed on Facebook Live, I'm assuming those videos archive. Do you want to talk about who some of the past guests have been, if people want to access those?
They're available either on Facebook or on Humanities Nebraska also has a YouTube channel. We started off with Dr. Andrew Jewell from UNL in early April. He's been in our speakers drill for a long time, and so we said, hey, would you be willing to try this out to do a program on Willa Cather? He's the editor of the Willa Cather Archive and co-editor of the Letters of Willa Cather, and that was a lot of fun. And then we moved on to have Diane Bystrom, who is also in our Speakers Bureau, do a great program on women's suffrage in Nebraska, and that was in mid-April. And last week we had State Poet Matt Mason. This is National Poetry Month. All of those are available. You can just, if you want, you can go to the Humanities Nebraska website and find them from there or on our social media.
Humanities Nebraska and the Nebraska Arts Council are helping arts organizations of all sizes across the state. What are you hearing from people that you usually work with about how the pandemic is affecting them?
We stay in close contact with our Arts Council colleagues. A lot of the organizations where they had to shut their doors to visitors and lost not only the kind of programming side of that, but the income that comes in from people coming in the doors and paying admissions and things like that, really started to hurt those kind of organizations first. And then on the humanities other side of it, with organizations that do any kind of cultural and humanities programming, I think a lot of them focus first on the Paycheck Protection Program loan opportunity that was available through the CARES Act in applying for loans in order to keep payroll going and things like that. Now that that wave has kind of gone through, I think there's continued concern about budgets and being able to maintain cash flow. The Arts Council and Humanities Nebraska are both, in our own ways, putting out grant opportunities for relief funding for organizations that we work with. That is also part of the CARES Act, actually, had some funding that went to the National Endowment for the Arts and the National Endowment for the Humanities. A portion of that was pushed out to the state arts councils and state humanities councils because we work so closely with the local organizations throughout our state and can deploy that funding where it is most needed. Yeah, we are going live with that tomorrow on our side. I believe the Arts Council has already opened up theirs as well. And we just want to do everything we can to help organizations keep activities going, keep staff working, and just do what they can to continue with the cultural life of the local communities as people really look to that as we weather this crisis that's been going on.
You and I, and probably most people listening to this show, know why arts and humanities events and organizations are important to us and to them. But in lifting up the arts infrastructure here in Nebraska, are there effects of that that some might not think about right away, either short-term or long-term?
There's a lot of good data about the economic impact of the arts. So I think that that is something people overlook early on, maybe about just whether it's the big performing arts centers or the smaller galleries and things like that, how important they are in the economic fabric of the community. And there's a ripple effect when those are all closed. So much of what we do is also really education focused and all about people being able to connect, to have dialogue and to explore history and to look at where we are now and where we're trying to go. Over time, the restriction of those the ability to do that kind of thing is going to start hurting our communities more, because we're all kind of closed up in our own homes or just social distancing and things like that. There are economic impacts, there are educational impacts, and then just the very idea that arts and culture and humanities are the things that nourish our spirit and feed our souls. And at times like this, when we're going through challenges, we can't lose sight of the importance of that as we're looking at kind of the long-term weathering the storms of whatever they may be and then finding our way forward.
One of the ways you can weather the storm and experience something from Humanities Nebraska is the next Humanities at Home Live. That is Tuesday, May 5th at 7 p.m., streaming on Facebook. You'll also be able to find archives on their YouTube channel. I've been talking with Chris Sumrick, who is Executive Director of Humanities Nebraska. We'll have a link to more information on the Humanities Nebraska website about the CARES Act Relief Funds, Humanities at Home Live, and more. Just head to netnebraska.org/radio. Well, Chris, it is really good to talk with you. Take care.
Thank you very much, Genevieve, and you all take care as well.
This is Friday Live. I'm Genevieve Randall, serving your community anywhere that might be. NET Radio is Nebraska's public radio network, online at netnebraska.org/radio. Still to come this morning, a new documentary from Platte Basin Time Lapse, a virtual show from Omaha, and we'll visit our poetry archives for some work by one of Nebraska's previous state poets. Next here on Friday Live, more music from singer-songwriter Andrea Von Kampen, who is one of the lead live online artists with a streaming show tonight. This is from her album Romeo and Juliet. We featured her live with two songs from that collection on our March 6th show. Now we get to hear another. This is titled Reconciliation.
Never was a story more miserable than this. A mother holds her child.
That's titled Reconciliation by Andrea Von Kampen from Romeo and Juliet. Andrea Von Kampen plays a streaming concert tonight as part of the Lead Live online series. Still ahead here on Friday Live, we'll dig into NET archives for some unpublished poetry by a former Nebraska State poet. And in about 8 minutes, a streaming event showcasing 11 artists' works tonight. This is Friday Live on NET Radio.
I'm Brandon Thomas. Mariah Lundgren is a filmmaker, photographer, and conservation storyteller from Nebraska. She was producer, director, and videographer for the documentary called Return of the Swan, which is part of the Platte Basin Timelapse Project. The film, which provides a fascinating look at the reintroduction of the trumpeter swan to Nebraska, was released to the public back in February. Mariah, thank you for talking today.
Thanks for having me.
You went to college at UNL for environmental studies. When did you get into filmmaking?
I think it was my junior year. I took the class that Mike Forsberg and Mike Farrell teach called Digital Imagery and Storytelling. And my advisor at the time knew that I was interested in photography, but I didn't really have an outlet for that, not being in the journalism school. And so I took this class with Mike Forsberg and Mike Farrell, and that opened my eyes into the world of science communication and conservation storytelling.
What are you shooting with these days?
Right now, I have a Nikon mirrorless camera, the Z6, and I've really liked the Z series that has came out this past year. So That's sort of what I've been shooting with.
For those who may not know, the Platte Basin Timelapse Project is a collective that uses storytelling to illustrate the water cycle here in Nebraska, but also shares the trials and triumphs of the conservation effort. When did you start getting involved at the Platte Basin Timelapse?
So after I took the class with Mike Forsberg and Mike Farrell, they asked if I would like to be an intern on the project. And then after I graduated, there was a position open at Platte Basin Timelapse. So I fell into that position, and now 4 or 5 years later, I've been with the project full time for several years now. So that's sort of how I got involved with Platte Basin Timelapse.
Could you tell us a bit about the story behind the trumpeter swan and its return to Nebraska?
Yeah, so the trumpeter swan was completely wiped out from Nebraska during the fur trade back in the early 1900s. And then due to conservation efforts in the 1960s, trumpeter swans were reintroduced to La Creek National Wildlife Refuge in southern South Dakota, which is near the Nebraska border. And that was the largest trumpeter swan reintroduction effort at the time. And then so from there, trumpeter swans were then documented in the Nebraska Sandhills near Valentine, Nebraska, shortly thereafter. Because of these conservation efforts and because of the good work that ranchers do to protect the landscape in the sandhills and the habitat, trumpeter swans have really thrived there. That's the history and the beginning of this story.
Conservation and sustainability go pretty well hand in hand, I think. And to incorporate the wind turbines and everything and how that's good for sustainability for us, it causes a problem for the trumpeter swan, likely. And so it's good to consider that. Why is it important to consider something like the trumpeter swan in Nebraska's ecology?
So trumpeter swans, I mean, they're beautiful birds. I don't think you could meet a person who's seen a swan and have them think anything less than that these birds are remarkable. So they have intrinsic value. They're indicators of good water quality. So if you see a swan on a lake, you know the water quality is good. You know, when you're driving down a highway in Nebraska, you look out and a lot of people think there's nothing out there because it's just, you know, a lot of grass. But the diversity out there and the amount of wildlife that you can find out in Nebraska is incredible. Putting big wind turbines and other anthropomorphic things on the landscape does have an impact to things around it. And so I'm not saying we shouldn't do it or we should do it. I'm just saying there's a lot more to the conversation that needs to happen than going about and doing it. So
I think you're getting there with films such as Return of the Swan, other things that the Platte Basin Timelapse is putting out. Most people, like you said, don't realize that that stuff's out there. What's your favorite place to go to get into the wilderness in Nebraska?
It's funny. whenever I tell people I'm from Nebraska, they always groan and, you know, feel bad for me. And whenever they do that, I feel bad for them for feeling bad for me. Because it's like, there's a ton of stuff in Nebraska and there's a lot of ecological diversity here in Nebraska. So, okay, close to home in Lincoln, the saline wetlands, those are my favorite. Those are north of town. There's lots of little wildlife management areas that you can go and you can walk with your kids or with a friend or your dog and just get out and explore some of the rarest ecosystems in the state, if not the country. So the Wildcat Hills out in western Nebraska, they're these big rocky escarpments that you can, you know, go hike on and get some vertical relief, which people don't think you can get any vertical relief in Nebraska, but you can. And actually, the next story that we're doing in this series is going to be about the reintroduction of bighorn sheep in the Wildcat Hills in western Nebraska. So that's the next story in this series we're doing about natural history species. Back to your question, saline wetlands outside of Lincoln, Wildcat Hills, and then honestly, if you just get in your car and drive Highway 2 and get into the sand hills, it's breathtaking.
My guest today was filmmaker Mariah Lundgren. Mariah, thank you for taking the time to talk today.
Thanks for having me.
You can watch Return of the Swan on the Platte Basin Timelapse webpage, along with other works of Mariah's. We will provide a link to the Platte Basin Timelapse on our website at netnebraska.org/radio. For Friday Live, I'm Brandon Thomas.
I'm Genevieve Randall. Heard a question Brandon asked that you liked, but then spaced out during Miranda's answer? It's okay. Take a second listen to Friday Live. We podcast the show each week, and you can look for that later this afternoon on our Facebook page or on our website. That address is netnebraska.org. It's First Friday, and if you miss walking around in a gallery experience, the Carson Center for Emerging Media Arts has a virtual 3D open house tonight that duplicates aspects of that experience.
There's a sonic immersive sensory room that one of our students created. One of our students is very interested in live action role play and games, so you can actually play a game in one of the spaces. Some students are interested in wearables and thinking about how could they even kind of turn that virtual space into a store.
Find out more about how this virtual 3D experience will work tonight by listening to the Friday Live Extra podcast. It's available to download wherever you listen to podcasts or stream it on our website at netnebraska.org/radio.
Support for humanities-related programming on NET comes from Humanities Nebraska, delivering opportunities to engage with history and culture on the web at humanitiesnebraska.org.
Gallery in Lincoln will be hosting a new show with 11 artists called Origins of Thinking, The Sketchbook. And they'll have a live stream opening for that on Facebook this evening at 7 p.m. I'm joined to talk about that and more by Lynette Fast. She curated the event and she's also an artist. Lynette, it's great to have you on Friday Live this week.
Well, thank you, Genevieve. It's great to be a part of your show.
Let's let listeners get to know you just a little bit before we dive into this show. What kind of artwork do you make?
I am a retired Lincoln Public Schools art educator, and I taught K through 12. I have a hard time picking a certain medium, but I primarily work in metalsmithing and create jewelry. And then I also like to experiment in some two-dimensional medium. I'm a painter, but I tend to do a lot of mixed media and incorporate different materials together. And those works tend to be quite abstract. Some of them have a little bit of representation to them, but mostly abstract.
Talk to me about this idea here that is in the title of this, about the sketchbook, where your mind might be as an artist as you're making sketches, making plans, basically.
Artists work in so many different ways in the planning and the execution of a piece of work. I, through those years of teaching and working with artists, have always thought just the process part of creating art was very interesting. And of course, being an educator, understanding how someone's mind works is always a really interesting piece to me. And so I have had a lot of educator artist friends that have worked with that same idea and really implemented in their classroom. And then, of course, knowing Julia Noyes and Deb Monfeld, a couple of artists at the gallery that also have a sketchbook as an important part of their everyday life, I thought, hey, this is a great idea to help people see the different ways that artists use sketchbooks and, you know, the thinking that comes through to move toward a finished piece of work. It can be spontaneous. It can be very planned. One of our artists, Jennifer Bockerman, is a huge researcher, and she spends a lot of time just preparing for a piece of work. In fact, she says that most of her time on a piece of work is spent in the whole research element, and then the execution of the piece goes so quickly because it's all of the thought is there, and it just flows out of her then. Other people like me, I like to play. And so, you know, it takes a lot of experimenting and a lot of trial and error and seeing how things work in order for me to come up with a solution. And a lot of times I really appreciate the way that the materials will bring new ideas to me as I'm working. So through this show, there are a huge variety of approaches to the thinking involved behind the work, and I can't wait for you to see it.
Something else I can't wait to hear about, I think the paper actually did an article about some butterflies that are on a wall there at Noyes.
We are doing a public art piece. It's a huge mural on our south wall of our building that is going to be covered with butterflies. The butterfly is so inspiring and so happy, and a lot of people relate to the butterfly in a lot of personal ways. And so we thought through this time right now that what a great opportunity for people to just sign up and come in and paint their version of a butterfly and add to our community mural. And so people just need to call the gallery, and they can schedule a day and a time to work with an artist. However, you know, with social distancing, we're kind of just making sure you got your materials and the things you need and then letting you go at it. And obviously, we're not scheduling very many people at one time so that you can feel like you're safe and you can explore and paint on your own. We hope people will sign up to come in and add their little piece to our community mural.
Another great way for people to also drive by the mural and see some artwork as they're out and about and maintaining that social distance, too.
It's such a beautiful, colorful addition to the 9th and O area there in the alleyway.
Well, Lynette Fast is an artist and teacher. She curated Origins of Thinking, the sketchbook. That's a show at Noyes Art Gallery featuring 11 artists. There's an opening event that will be live streamed on their Facebook page tonight at 7 p.m. And then you can also link through to the gallery for more information about that butterfly mural. Well, Lynette, thank you. It's been a joy talking with you.
You bet. I hope people will join us for our 7 p.m. event. We are giving away 2 gift certificates to people who comment and view the show. You have to comment on the show during the hour, and your name will be put into a drawing for a gift certificate to spend in that focus gallery on those 11 artists' works.
And you can link to more about this event and all the things that you hear about on Friday Live by going to our webpage. That is netnebraska.org/radio. There's more music ahead here on Friday Live, as well as an event in Omaha that will feature two state poets before Matt Mason. The state poet was William Clefcorn, longtime professor of English at Nebraska Wesleyan University in Lincoln. Clefcorn recorded a poetry series for NET called Poetry of the Plains, which was aired until he died in 2011. We thought we might revisit Bill's voice from that series with a couple of his unpublished poems.
This one is for a friend of mine named David Lee, very fine poet. He has the most amazing penmanship of anyone I know. It is absolutely, and I don't use this word frequently, but I have to use it in connection with Dave Lee's writing, absolutely gorgeous. The flourishes are amazing, a little bit difficult to read. So you have to figure some of the words out, but absolutely gorgeous on the page. And I love getting letters from him because it's a kind of puzzle. Once I've figured out what the words mean, I put them together into sentences, and the sentences usually make at least a modicum of sense. So I wrote this poem with him in mind. It's called Letter from a Longtime Friend for Dave Lee. Not finally illegible, this letter from a longtime friend, because, like the daily crossword, eventually word by word I solve it. My friend's dips and doodles and looping flourishes, so delicately complex, I marvel at the hand that shaped them. Small hand, I know, for a man so large, so muscular. It being, nonetheless, the hand, or so my friend has told me, that in the ring could deliver counter punches too swiftly for most of his opponents to see them coming. But the few exceptions, he said, convinced him to try a different occupation. So now he is using the hand to write with. Narratives delivered as poetry, their characters lifting themselves from the page to become the breath and the blood so familiar to those whose breath and blood they share, some of them heroic, some pitiful, some hilarious, all of them the consequence of dips and doodles and looping flourishes that, in an earlier life, I'd have labeled sissy. My own hand, meanwhile, utterly maverick and, therefore, masculine, except that on the playground, it somehow couldn't manage to find the jaw of the bad kid most deserving. And I'd tongue the blood from my swollen lip, tasting the thick, sweet residue of miscalculation. On my desk, then, in the classroom, problems of impossibly long division. In front of me, the girl whose thick, dark hair I wanted to touch, but never did. My hand with its potato fingers working to find the answer that, should I ever find it, would enable me to move into the following stanza of my days to look for yet another. And I'll close with a poem called Work, Work, Work. The epigraph is from Eamon Grennan, a poem of his called Work of Art. Work, work, which makes the moment matter. Work, work, work. It was the boy's mother's trinity, God and Son and Holy Ghost, embodied daily in the apron she lost her hands in when worry overwhelmed her. Triad, she'd speak in a voice he never failed to nod his sorry head to. Nod as if he not only sympathized, but likewise understood, which of course he didn't. His small concerns no larger than himself. But nonetheless, he'd nod and smile, and his mother would look at him and shake her head and say, "It's all I ever do, and what do I have to show for it?" And always his answer was lost somewhere inside the long, long immensity of silence. until his mother's eyes were more than he could bear. And always then she too would smile and nod, her hands fleshy and strong, emerging from the apron. And after they'd touched his face, as so often they did, he'd stand for the longest time alone, unable to stop or even so very slightly reduce whatever it was that was consuming him. His mother, not far away, busy at the sink, her hands lost in suds, her soprano struggling to produce a tune as if nothing of any consequence at all was about to happen.
We heard the late William Clefcorn reading two of his unpublished poems from the NET Radio archives, Work, 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 and Letter from a Longtime Friend. Next here on Friday Live, the caretaker of the Earth Room in New York City is doing a virtual show through Maple Street Construct in Omaha. KVNO's Corbin Hirschhorn tells us more.
Maple Street Construct's virtual exhibitions have been offering a new side of artists' work, sharing the conversations behind the scene. Their latest show, High Peak Monocacy, opening today, is a collaboration between artist Mike Nesbitt and manager of New York City's Earth Room, William Dilworth. Maple Street thrives on the collaborations between artists, and this show was no exception despite social distance. Artist Mike Nesbitt.
You know, I think it was just with spending even such a short amount of time together, one, I think we felt like we probably could have spent another month. And I think there's just a certain type of character that I'm attracted to and that I think Maple Street is attracted to. And it's a character that has a certain sensibility for the arts that doesn't necessarily care about the glamour or the surface. It's about the stuff, and it's about the making of things, and it's about how do you put yourself in a position to make the things that you want to make, which is different for all of us.
As much as this virtual exhibition is about the art, dichotomous photography from each artist's point of view in isolation, it's equally about the conversation between them, also posted online.
Humor, I mean, I think that humor is an attribute that sometimes is downplayed. And I think, Mike, you and I realized that it's an asset. And I think that the more the merrier, so to speak, when it comes to that.
Well, yeah, I think the humor aspect, and I think it allows a certain level of vulnerability, and I think it allows us to take risks.
Nesbitt and Dilworth discussed the specifics of the work, but also philosophy and music, sometimes taking the form of virtual poetry.
Well, it's an exchange of sensibilities. And that's the extraordinary opportunity that came about by this, is that for a conventional art show, I guess, you'd make a bunch of work and put it up and people would respond to it. But with this, we're able to take that different approach. And so we're able to bring to it those sounds, like, you know, sort of playing around with each other. It's like we riff off each other. You know, we establish certain, you know, curiously, I'm kind of approaching this musical analogy because, and that came about too in our conversation. It has been musical in a way. It's sort of like we have established certain refrains and we do that. We kind of hit a note and, you know, we let the other guy carry it. And it's been back and forth. So that conversation, I've not had that experience before because most of my art practice, my art life is, you know, working alone in the studio.
High Peak Monocacy, which refers to both artists' imposed shelter-in-place locations, shows the work and sentiments of both artists, Mike Nesbitt and Bill Dilworth. It's available online today at maplestreetconstruct.com.
What was interesting was being a participant in this conversation as an artist, as also kind of seeing how is this going to get kind of curated into an exhibition in Omaha. and also as a friend and a comrade to Bill. You know, the tone of this conversation, I think, and what I really appreciated from Bill was it did take a very abstract, poetic move early on. And I think that allowed the work to free itself even more than some of the other conversations that I've been participating that have been maybe at times a bit more referential to precedents or historical references. And I think what was so refreshing about this was it seemed like we were just referential to one another and to our immediate landscape.
For Friday Live, I'm Corbin Hirshhorn.
I'm Genevieve Randall. Next here on Friday Live, Lincoln-based pianist Paul Barnes continues to set up online concerts. Right now, we get to hear his recording of a Philip Glass Etude, number 8, from Paul's album New Generations.
Thank you.
We heard Paul Barnes playing music by Philip Glass. That's the Etude No. 8. Barnes just announced on Facebook recently that he'll give an encore performance after his streaming concert last week. That can be found on his Facebook page. Coming up this morning on NET Radio, classical music on Morning Concert. And this afternoon, Bruce Wallace will be in for Laura Black on Classics by Request. Be sure to visit the NET website for podcasts of the show at netnebraska.org/radio. Segments of Friday Live are pre-recorded. Thanks to everyone who makes Friday Live possible, including Brandon Thomas, engineer James DeShano, and associate producer Dave Hughes. I'm Genevieve Randall. Support for programming on NET Radio comes from the Glencore School of Music at the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, nurturing the creativity, artistry, and scholarship of Nebraska students in music and dance. Information about upcoming performances and applications to become a student at the Glencore School of Music at music.unl.edu. Support for programming also comes from Constellation Studios, a mixed-use artist's workspace for all types of printmaking and paper projects, featuring printing presses, bookmaking, type shop, and wet paper studio. For info, constellation-studios.net. Support for programming also comes from Union Bank and Trust, with hardship loans and special considerations to help customers through these uncertain times. The people of UBT are here for Nebraskans and available by phone anytime. Member FDIC.